This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, your pop culture home.
Hello and welcome to episode 6 of Richer and the Mailman. I'm Josh Richer, as you hopefully know by now, and with me, of course, is the mailman, the one and only Jeff Machado.
Hello.
So, the last night's episode of Breaking Bad was huge, as we expected it to be, as we hoped it to be. Didn't disappoint. I'm still kind of shaking a little bit by an anxiety-inducing ending, I'd say.
Yeah, it was definitely the most heart-pounding episode since the train-robbing episode. And I would say the second-best episode of the season so far.
Wow, the second-best. Wow, that's pretty good. Yeah, I'd say it's up there. But we'll get to that in a little bit, as we normally do. We usually take care of a little bit of other business first.
Yeah, let's get to some business.
And then we'll get to Breaking Bad. There's a lot to talk about, a lot of in-depth stuff to talk about, because this was just teeming with just little nuggets.
Yeah, it was a nugget-filled episode.
I could go for some nuggets right now. But anyway,
I had nuggets today from Wendy's.
Oh, those?
Not very good.
Wendy's nuggets have gone downhill. Were they ever good?
No, they've never really been good, but, you know.
Look at me, giving them the benefit of the doubt.
Burger King has basically ripped off the McDonald's nugget, which is the golden standard. And, you know, they used to have those weird little miniature, like, chicken tenders. They're just terrible. They got rid of those. But, yeah, I would go McDonald's, Burger King, and then a couple other restaurants, and then Wendy's. Don't get the nuggets at Wendy's.
No, well, I mean, you shouldn't. There's a lot of things you shouldn't get at Wendy's. I'm still weary of the you know, the weird standards that they have there. Like, people want chili when they come to fast food. A baked potato with gross chives and sour cream that you squeeze out of a tube. People are looking for that. I don't know. They might not even have that, but I'm assuming they do because they've had for my entire life.
Oh, they do. They've got a great, like, baked potato selection of toppings. And also, I like their chili, so suck it.
Oh, well, I guess I've been corrected. Speaking of chicken products, mm-hmm. As you know, yesterday, Jeff, was the opening of football. Well, kind of. It was the opening Sunday of football. Because that Thursday game is still kind of weird. I don't know if I'm a fan of it yet.
Yeah, I thought for sure that would fail after the first year.
Yeah, but they keep doing it.
They're still trying to go football three nights a week. It's weird.
It's just weird. It's just very weird. But what I did yesterday after running a race, actually in the morning, a 5K, and not doing my best.
K is for kilometers.
K is for kilometers, in case you're not on the metric system.
You set a PB?
I did not set a PB, actually. One funny thing that happened during this was, so I'm running the 5K, and there's a point where you're supposed to turn, but there was no sign and no flagger there, like no person volunteer flagging. So I just kept running, and it's in like this like park, and I'm, you know, you're on like the roadways, and I'm just running, and I start to see that I'm like at the entrance, and I'm like, oh, I guess I've run too far. So I just turn around and I run, and then I see this girl flagging, and some guy must have seen me make the turn or not make the turn, and he made it and told that girl, like, I think you're supposed to be over there. There's no signage. And, yeah, so it cost me, like, a minute, probably.
Oh, man. That's classic 5K problems right there.
Classic 5K problems. Ugh. Tell me about it. But after I did that on wonderful football Sunday, I headed over to actually met up with the godfather of the whole Place to Be Nation, Justin Rosero. I headed over to his house. Apparently you were too busy, too good for us.
Yeah, I was doing my own thing.
Yeah, we got some boneheads again, which as anybody who's been listening regularly, this place, we just cannot stay away. And it's not just me.
Best wings in town.
It is the best. It's the best wings in town, that town, because there's nothing in that town. But
if there was a bigger town,
if there was a bigger town, it would still be the best. I think it's rising in the state, actually. I've seen a lot of stuff in this tiny state of Rhode Island, which I wonder how many of our viewers are actually from there. But I digress. Bonehead wings are excellent, and I'm even seeing through my Facebook and social media other people ranting about this place. So of course we just had to go there because we're thinking, we're watching football, don't want to cook, let's just grab some wings.
There's no better way to kick off the season.
We had four kinds.
Yeah, with some bonehead wings.
Bonehead wings, Shipyard pumpkin, which I'm kind of regretting now that I've had the Sea Dog pumpkin.
Sea Dog pumpkin is much better.
Much better. Sorry, Shipyard. And then we actually cracked. We had three TVs going at once.
Yeah, you know the thing about Justin Rosero is he's a multitasker.
He is a multi. It got really disorienting. I mean, it was great because we both do fantasy, obviously, like yourself. It got really, really tough to keep track because he was watching the Jets game. The Jets was actually on here in New England, which doesn't happen every week. And it was on the NFC channel. It was on Fox of all of them because they were playing the Buccaneers.
Yeah, that happens sometimes if there's an NFC team and they're playing a team that in your region a lot of people root for. Apparently, there's a lot of Jets fans around.
There's a lot of Jets fans. New England's full of New York fans in general.
I don't understand.
So that was on like the bigger TV. Then we had Red Zone on the big, like flat screen. And then on a little TV that he dragged down, we had the Pats game with no sound. I felt like
that
a second class citizen in New England.
That was classic.
It was. No, I get it because he never gets to watch the Jets every week, you know. And that actually ended up being a really good game. The Patriots game, it was not a good game. It was very nerve-wracking and disappointing in a lot of ways. But that Jets game was insane at the end. It was bonkers.
Yeah, I actually, they put up on the crawl that it was a final that Tampa Bay had won 17-15.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's fucking Dewey. Dewey defeats Truman there, huh?
Yeah, it was on that level.
It was totally on that level.
Dewey defeats
it actually
Truman.
Probably reached more people, to be honest. But
Dewey elected. But, I couldn't believe it.
And I'm
watching, you know, the game day highlights, and they're talking about pushing the quarterback out of bounds, personal foul penalty, and the Jets win. It was, you know, it's fine. The Patriots won.
Yeah, that was disappointing too, though, because you're seeing a lot of little chinks in the armor there and the things that you're kind of worried about.
I don't know. I was encouraged by it because, all right, so obviously Josh and I are Patriots fans, being from New England. And
oh, that was tacky, huh?
That
was really tacky.
What, Go Pats?
Just a random Go Pats. What am I, some sort of masshole, like, douche?
Yeah, you're an asshole.
Okay, fine. Thanks.
Masshole by association.
Thanks for helping. Anyway.
And obviously, the consensus is that the Patriots are going to run away the division because the Bills, Jets, and Dolphins are going to suck. But they went into Buffalo. They didn't actually, you know, blow them out or anything. They had some troubles. But I think they manhandled the Bills pretty well. It was just a turnover thing. They turned the ball over like 3-4 times. And without those turnovers, the Patriots, you know, they're dealing with the loss of a couple tight ends for whatever reasons. I don't really know what happened.
Yeah, those guys, I don't know what's up. I don't know what's up with those guys.
They'll be fine. They'll be fine. Like Brady said, he will throw the ball to Danny Amendola 300 times if these rookies do not understand what is happening.
Yeah, he was impressive. He had an impressive game. Unfortunately, I was also playing him in a game in fantasy, so wasn't very happy about his performance in that way, which is obviously those strange bedfellows that fantasy football makes and alliances.
Yeah.
Angry at Amendola's performance.
Yeah, fantasy football makes it so that if you're watching your team play and your opponent is on your fantasy team and they score a touchdown, you're like, ah, yeah, kind of.
Yeah, there's definitely, like, there's a little bit of both, and you feel like you can't commit to either. like the disappointment or the excitement. Like you feel like if you commit to the disappointment there, you're totally betraying your team.
Fantasy football kind of hedges your bets.
It does.
You know, it makes it so either something good or something bad is going to happen on every play. It can't be total devastation.
But that was a good thing about the red zone that we were watching, and I'm totally jealous because I don't have that with my cable subscription. It was just every scoring play, so I was seeing everything that my fantasy players were doing.
Well, see, when you said earlier that I was too busy to watch the game with you guys, where I actually was watching the game at my dad's. As per usual, I try to watch all the Patriots games with my old man. And he, for years, had the Sunday ticket package in the Red Zone channel. And he just, instead of picking a game that was interesting, he would go to the Red Zone channel. And he loved it. And I kind of didn't really like it. And the reason why, I think the best quote about what watching the Red Zone is like came from Bill Simmons. He said, watching the Red Zone is like watching a porn that's just a compilation of money shots.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, I see that.
It's just the money shot all the time. It's too much. You're jumping all around.
If I was given the choice of watching a full game of teams that are out of market or whatever, like, for instance, CBS is who carries the Patriots games here because they carry the AFC. So if I have a choice between watching the NFC game, for instance, or the Red Zone, I'm always going to pick the game over the Red Zone. But it's great to have the Red Zone there because there's tons of commercials.
Yeah, I don't like the commercials, but still, if you're even with two games, you can pretty much avoid the commercials. When you're watching the Red Zone, how do they get to the Red Zone? You know, you're missing all the good stuff.
You are missing the good stuff.
You're missing the team driving down the field.
They don't just show that. They've been showing a lot of, like, just flipping around to games when there's something interesting happening, too. They've been doing a lot of that. That's what I noticed. I thought it was good. I thought it was a cool thing to have, but it's not something I would just watch that itself.
Well, the main thing I took away from opening weekend was just a reinforcement of my just outright rage over the fact that these professional football players who spend the entire year conditioning themselves to play football and learning the playbook and practicing and playing preseason games, they just fuck up all the time. And I'm sick of it. Even when the Bills – obviously, I'm rooting for the Patriots. When C.J. Spiller fumbles the ball, it drives me absolutely crazy. What is wrong with these guys? Like, I'm sorry that I am not – I was not born like 6'2", 230, solid build, and like 4.3 speed. But if I was, I would never fumble. I would be like Marshall Faulk. I would be like Walter Payton. How come these – Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis, fine. How come there are certain guys who don't fumble and then Stephen Ridley can't even fall down without getting touched and he fumbles the ball? Haven't these guys seen Remember the Titans?
Apparently they – I would assume they would have because it's a football movie. And my assumption is people who play football watch football movies just like accountants watch movies about accounting. However
– yeah, and we're talking about a high school football team.
I think it's sloppiness. It's a technique that you've developed over time.
What are the coaches telling them? Where is Denzel Washington? If you miss a block, you run a lap. If you drop a pass, you run a lap. If you fumble the football, I will break your foot off and your John Brown hind parts. Where's Bill Belichick going up to Stephen Ridley and saying, hey, look, here's what you do. You take the ball and you try to literally force it into your chest. You try to push it through your chest plate and your skin into your innards. That's what you should be doing. Why are people running around with the ball like up and by their head?
I don't know. I bet
these guys are strong. You hold the ball like a pussy. You're gonna get it.
Trying to make.
Here's what I should say. Here's what I say,
man.
You fumble the ball, you're out for the rest of the game. You fumble a second time, you're out for the year. That's it. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of the fumbling. It's so lame. I don't want to see fumbles. Hold on to the ball. Be a man. Don't let another man rip the ball out of your hands. Protect the fucking football, please. That's all I gotta say about that.
I mean, I have to agree with you that it shouldn't be happening when that is your job. You're a running back, or you're an offensive player who's supposed to be carrying the ball for yardage and protecting it, and this keeps happening to you. Well, you're horrible at your job. Like, it doesn't matter how fast you are if you're going to lose the ball, especially Stephen Ridley yesterday. If people weren't familiar, if they're not sports fans, he just looked like complete garbage, fumbling at really – one of them got called back, right?
Yeah.
Fumbles, but it just
– But still, two fumbles and, like, 10 touches.
Then they,
you know that you suck when Las Vegas has a bet on how many touches before your first fumble.
Which is funny because I was actually going to note that Stephen Ridley rose in the fantasy rankings – super high.
Yeah, people
season,
were taking him late
understand.
First round, early second round. Dude, he's going to get benched. He can't hold on to the
and that's
ball.
That's exactly what happened.
He's so got tiny Marie hands or something.
I can't really argue with that. I can't really argue with that fumbling should be something that never happens. But I don't think we'll ever see your solution to that ever implemented.
Well, it's
and that
it's,
makes me sad.
It's straight up going to make me stop watching the games because it's
I'm so glad
me off
we
so
have that on tape.
These are professionals. These are professional football players.
That is one of those things where, like, forever, you ranting and ending with like ridiculous claims, like it's making me not want to watch the game.
There's.
Like, I've always wanted to have this.
There are hundreds of people whose livelihood depends on these games, and they work so hard, and you got the owner spending all this money, and the GM making all these decisions, and the coach planning the game and like, not sleeping for months at a time, and the quarterback making amazing throws and audibling at the line and all this stuff, and then a running back just drops it, and then you get the ball at the 20-yard line, and the game just totally changed. Man, I'm sick of it. I just want to see a legitimate contest. Which team is better? That's the great thing about soccer. There's no fumbling in soccer.
Figured out. Me and another friend were looking up. We were trying to see what else was happening. There's some World Cup qualifying stuff that's been happening. But I know that was like over in USA's conference there. What is that? The
CONCACAF.
CONCACAF. The CONCACAF. Yeah. I was going to say the CONCAF. I didn't want to sound like a douche, though.
CONCACAF. The worst acronym ever made.
Yeah. So that's the only thing I can think of. But it was really disappointing, to say the least. So that's a good start to the weekend. Or an end to the weekend, at least. I thought it was really nice. It was really nice to be able to watch football.
Yeah, football is, you know, football means fall. It means... Your baseball team is out of it, or they're still in it, and it's either a bonus or an escape. It's a great time for football to come along.
It's a great time. But anyway, this is the time now. We got to move on. We got to move on to the thing that's paying the bill. Whatever it is, we got to move on to Breaking Bad because there's a lot that happened. So as we say every time here, there's going to be spoilers. After this. So if you keep listening, you're going to find out vital information that might happen after you know the parts that you've seen. You might not be caught up. So don't be a fool. Don't ruin it for yourself, cuz the show's too good and the experience of seeing it unadulterated is too precious to ruin just because you're not stopping it now. So skip ahead. And we'll be back for you with some other stuff like the postal tip of the week.
The postal tip of the week and also the possible makings of one of the greatest athletes of all time.
Yeah. So come back. Come back to us. But if you're sticking around and you've seen Breaking Bad... How about that cliffhanger?
Holy crap.
Is that really even... Could you call... I mean, like, there's cliffhangers.
How
are they
even
stopping a scene in the middle of bullets firing?
How are they going to do... How are they going to open next week's show? How are they going to do a cold open they ended off mid-bullet, like, in the air?
Logically, it's just going to come right back in. Because, you know, they do the last week on, and I think they're just going to come right back in. But I could be wrong. For all we know, we could go ahead in the future again, which I think won't happen because we're clearly getting to that future point.
You know what I'm getting nervous about is that there's only 3 episodes left, and I'm thinking maybe we're not going to get those ellipses. Is it the plural?
No, I think they're going to – maybe not. Why do you think that, though?
I don't think that we're going to see how Walt poisoned Brock, and I don't think we're going to see how he killed Crazy Eight. And those are two things that I was, like, really looking forward to as, like, great cold opens that just never happened.
Wait, how he killed Crazy Eight?
Yeah. Well, how he disposed of the body. Obviously, you see him kill him, and then all of a sudden
he's just gone. How they normally did it. They put him in the barrel with the acid. That's how I assume everybody gets disposed of on this show. Brock, too. No, they did that with Brock. Don't you remember with the bike and everything? They're melting it down at the beginning of... I forgot the name of the episode, but it was, like, the episode, like, right after.
Melting what down?
His bike. Brock's... Oh, Brock. I'm thinking of... What's his...
Yeah,
Sparks.
He makes the Lily of the Valley.
Oh, poison. How he poisoned... Yeah, well, that... I don't think we're ever going to...
Does he put it in his Cheerios, his Fruit Loops?
Oh.
Because they mention his Fruit Loops.
They do mention his Fruit Loops. Maybe, well, that's a good place to start. Okay, there's a lot of scenes. I was actually wondering when I was trying to set this up about how, you know, how we're going to flow through this particular episode here. Because there's just so many important scenes that left you with a feeling or moved the plot along in some way. And that's a good one to start off right there is the whole thing where Walt was at Andrea's house,
yeah,
and like was meeting there under the ruse of trying to get in touch with Jesse, who was using again, and it was just really, really weird, disturbing scene. It felt unsettling, like you really felt like there was like a snake in the grass, like somewhere around, you know, like
yeah, he's standing there next to the kid who he poisoned, telling the girl, you know, a total lie just to try to get Jesse.
And saying all these, like...
to come up, to show up, to be murdered.
Yeah.
Oh,
we need
God.
To flush Jesse out so he can be murdered. I know how to do it. I make him think that Brock and Andrea are in danger. It was actually smart. It was classic Walt, where it was smart, but it just, like, was so wrong. Like, and every scene that this is the second time we've seen him with Brock. And yeah. It's just...
Yeah, it's very disturbing.
It leaves you with a very, very weird, I won't say queasy, but just like, and like every, it gives that much more gravitas to every line that Walt says around Brock.
And here's my thing. So Hank intercepts the phone call when Andrea calls Jesse to try to, what if Jesse had gotten the call? Is this a stupid plan from the beginning? Like, is Jesse just going to assume that since he... basically said, you know, I'm going to mess you up, that Walt is going to try to kill him. He already assumed he was going to try to kill him.
He assumes
that. 3 episodes ago. So why would this plan work? I feel like it should have gone a little differently.
I'll tell you why Walt thought it was going to work. Is because Walt thinks of Jesse as almost like an animal in some ways. He knows that he's super emotional. He's super impulsive. And not like Walt impulsive now, but like... like, just flipping out over anything. So, his thought was, he's going to hear that I'm here. That I'm over here at Andrea's house with Brock. And he's obviously very protective of Brock because that's been a thing that he's been, you know, that he flipped out about. That's the whole reason why this is happening right now. So, he's going to rush over here because Jesse can't control his emotions. And his anger will only make – it will make him drive here faster.
Yeah.
So that's what I think that Walt – which is a very good thing to – that's what's happened so far in the past. However, he's not accounting for how smart Jesse is and that perhaps Jesse, who actually we know he's smart because apparently Walt forgets this because of all the different plots that he's come up with already, that this is all – that Jesse gets – traps him in a plot.
Yeah, I mean...
which was great. Which was a brilliant little turn right there.
Probably, along with the tread lightly scene from the first episode, the most powerful sequence of the series.
The whole event, so he goes over there to the house, he calls, and then Hank hears the message on the Hello Kitty phone, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And then he... his line, "Nice try, asshole." Perfect. Right? Yeah. A part of me is like, I'm like, oh, I thought I would like hate lines like this far into it right now, and just like having this like Hank, like having this whole Hank is like the cowboy with the white hat on sort of thing, getting these one-liners and get. But I'm loving this.
Yeah, because he knows, like, nice try, asshole, is basically, oh, so you think you can just
get Jesse
pull the fast
over there,
one over Jesse and yeah. you can kill him? No, you didn't realize that Jesse is actually talking to the DEA.
Yeah, but that's the key mistake that Walt makes here is just assuming that Jesse would never, ever, yeah. ever rat him out,
and he actually
and he would ever go to him.
He actually specifically states that in the scene when he meets up with Jack.
Yeah,
Jesse is not a rat.
Jesse is not a rat. Well, that was big. But before we get there, so Walt meets with them. Obviously, we saw like after the cold open, we ended up being on the other end of the phone call that Walt was making at the end of the episode last time. Which was him calling up, I got a job for your Uncle Jack. And then we get Todd and everything. And we get the meet. And that's where I really started to go, Walter is more human now than he was at the end of last season. Or maybe it's all been there and, like, it's just starting to come out. Or maybe, like, just specifically having to deal with this Jesse issue of, like, what do I do has made us see it. But he, till the end, is just talking about Jesse as if you know, he's this great guy, that he would never do anything like that to him, that he's like his son. He basically says he's horrified at the prospect that Jesse would ever be a rat. And it almost like he's concerned with, like, Jesse's rep.
Like, yeah, it's the Heisenberg versus Walter White thing. Like, as Heisenberg, he is ruthless, and he's going to do whatever he can do to, you know, and it enforce his code and get what he needs done. But when it comes to Jesse and Hank, he doesn't really want to hurt either of them. He kind of wishes he had just gotten away with it and it would have been fine. He could pay Jesse off and Jesse would go away, or Hank would never find out and he would just let him die of cancer. But since Jesse didn't even want to meet with him so he could explain the Brock thing, he's like, I guess I got to put a hit on him. But
yeah.
But don't hurt him.
Don't hurt him. No, make sure it's quick and painless, like, because he's, like, family.
Yeah, it's just like the Saul thing. Like, oh, maybe we can send Hank to,
to Belize.
To Belize.
How could you forget
family?
That?
Family, what are you talking about?
Perfectly hashtaggable line.
Yeah.
Send him to Belize there. I mean, it was just, like, it was written hashtag. For Twitter.
Exactly. So, he doesn't want Hank and Jesse to be harmed, but it kind of, the fact that it has to be there now because he can't get them to respect him anymore.
No, the line is, he won't listen to reason and he's very angry. He's very angry at something he thinks he did, because that's how he keeps presenting this to everyone. He presented it to Skylar. He just won't listen to reason. I just need to explain to him that I had to do this. And he says the same thing to Uncle Jack there, that he won't listen to reason. And it's just like, you got to figure that Uncle Jack's hearing this shit and is just thinking, this is the guy that's so feared. This is Heisenberg here. This guy's sitting here like, won't whack a dude. Or it's like, you know, like,
You won't do it yourself, huh?
You won't do it yourself. He won't whack a dude, and he's telling us how we need to do it because this guy won't listen to reason. Like, it's just weird.
And basically, this situation is set up by the opening, because Jack wants Walter to come back and cook for him. So in the opening, they show Lydia and Jack and Todd.
Yeah.
Checking the purity of the meth that Todd is making. And Todd's got it back up to 76%, but it's a problem. It's not blue.
Yeah,
first of all,
wasn't blue.
I'm not, like, a scientist or anything, so I don't understand. Like, I've been trying to remember why it was blue.
It was blue because of the methylamine.
But they're still using methylamine.
It's still methylamine, but Todd says it a little bit later in the episode.
Oh, yeah, he burnt it, whatever.
He cooked it off, like, the blue, which obviously Lydia was like... But, I mean, I'm hearing this and I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, Lydia, you just had these guys go in and murder this entire other group of men to get the percentage up. Technically, they already just did on their first cook after that. it's not Heisenberg and it's not Jesse cooking, which are the people that you know, like, can make this easily. You know, that could just throw a batch of Blue Sky together, like, presto. Like they're making, you know, some brownies for the bake sale down the street there at the church. Like, Todd can't do that.
Well, the thing about Lydia, Lydia is a perfect business person. You tried to make the argument a few episodes ago about how Jesse was the moral center of the show.
I tried, and I failed.
Lydia might be the moral center of the show. Because she really doesn't – all she really cares about is the business. And she knows that if the methylamine – if the crystal meth isn't blue, it's not going to sell as well. So Todd is trying his best. And what I really loved about that scene is how his ringtone was – she blinded me with
fire. That was after. I mean, that's just one amazing thing about it. This whole scene.
Oh my god, it was incredible.
Which is in line with the rest of the cold openers. But you were making a point there.
Yeah. So you got this psycho killer who shot a child just because he happened upon a caper, and now his ringtone is "She Blinded Me with Science" because he's just wanting to be like Walter White. He's calling him Mr. White now. And did you notice on the phone?
Yeah, I did.
Jesse called Walter.
Walter?
Walter?
I did not pick up on that.
Yeah, for the first time. Wow. For the first time in the series, Jesse calls anyway. So Todd is like the new Jesse.
Which is so Mike-like because that's what Mike called him every time. Walter.
Yeah.
You know, that's wow. Wow, there's so much going on there with, like, the two dads, with Jesse, and, like, how he's kind of, like...
Yeah, and Todd... So Jesse's calling him Walter. Todd is calling him Mr. White.
And he's praising him.
He's focusing really hard on trying to be a good scientist because he looks up... He wants to, like... It's amazing. It's an amazing, like, psychopathic character.
He's actually one of the more chilling psychopaths I've seen on TV, and that includes Dexter. That includes, like, you know what I mean? Like, he's on par with stuff like Norman Bates as far as, like, how Jesse Plemons is playing this guy. Just like, it's so, like, he looks like a puppy dog half the time. His face, like, the look on his face is just like, all right, like, just so just easygoing.
Like, hey, you want me to call my Uncle Jack? How many guys do we need to kill?
Yeah, like, you wonder how he ended up working for this pest company, and, like, he thought that he would, like, make connections. like what events in his life, Todd's life here, led him to actually end up in a life of crime, meeting the meth kingpin of the Southwest.
Yeah. So this is what ties in to the climactic scene.
Well, before we get there,
continue.
There's so much in the cold open. There's so much in the cold open.
That's
it. Yeah. So, like, first of all, sorry to cut you off there, by the way. Are you all right?
I'm fine.
Okay. I just want to make sure. I just want to make sure that I'm not stepping on any toes.
No, you don't step away.
It's just that I saw so many things at the beginning of there. Like, first of all, like, you get to see who Uncle Jack is. Like, he's just a criminal, which just makes the difference between, like, say, Walter White and Gus, all of these guys who were, like, the top echelon of what they were doing, which was selling meth and running this empire that, you know, involved violence and everything. Jack won't wear a mask. He's pretty much not interested in the whole process of what's happening. He doesn't give a fuck. All he cares about is shooting people and moving this stuff out and protecting it so they can make this stuff and move it out.
Let
me worry about what I breathe, he says, even though, like, you know, Todd, Lydia's wearing this crazy, like, old school gas mask. You know, and Todd's got his mask on too, and, you know, like, being like, well, Mr. White said these chemicals are... Which is another reference to him just talking highly of Mr. White. I mean, that guy is just...
Yeah, he's the kind of guy that doesn't care if he gets lung cancer.
He doesn't care about anything.
It's actually kind of cool if he gets lung cancer. He's a tough bastard.
He is a tough bastard. I mean, he's obviously a tough bastard.
Look at all these pussies wearing gas masks.
Yeah, my lungs can take it. Mesothelioma? What's that?
Subject for another episode.
The next part of this cold open is where the problem is, as you said, it's not blue. And what Lydia's worried about is not the purity, even. She doesn't care about the purity. It's the blue for the branding.
Yeah, sure.
We need to reinforce our brand.
And yeah, you're going to buy the blue meth. If it's not the blue meth, then it's nothing.
She's a great businesswoman.
She is.
I don't know if she's the moral center. I don't know if I'll go that far. But, I mean, she's acting most in line of how she should be acting. Like, she knows what she should be doing. She's there to make
sure
that
she's making very conscientious decisions.
Conscientious, yeah. Yeah, she's not being ruled by emotion at all. She's already been frightened prior. So then they have this whole thing where they start talking about, does this look blue to you? No, it looks like there's a touch of blue, maybe blue-green. Hey, aquamarine, that's what we'll call it. we'll put some food coloring in there, which was just like, that's another great callback, because now it's like that's the exact product that Walter was trying not to make. He was trying to move away from Jesse of this impure product with these cheesy gimmicks, and like he's technically made a cheesy gimmick product. He's made the blue meth that's like knock your socks off, but like he's tried to avoid like adding anything or make like having
chili pea.
He's trying to avoid the chili pea.
Yeah,
he doesn't want that. But
food coloring is
that's what his product and his legacy is leading to. That happened. That was that was like one of the best things ever. And then you start to notice that they've got music playing when they're in the lab. And it's that song Sherry by a guy from Journey. How do I not remember his name right now? Steve Perry. I mean, those are the moments you get horrified, because I could say Steve Perry like every day and mention Steve Perry from Journey. And
well, you
the
know,
moment
Josh,
that I'm being recorded.
We're getting old. We're getting old and
I've done a lot.
Your ginkgo biloba today.
I have not been taking my ginkgo biloba. That is one supplement that I have not been
taking.
For
all you 30 plus listeners out there, make sure you take your ginkgo biloba.
Helps you remember things. Like
yeah.
Steve Perry.
Like Steve Perry.
Lead singer of Journey. Former lead singer of Journey. But so this song's playing, and then I start to get this other weird feeling. Like, so it feels like any workplace, office, doctor, like any office you've ever gone to or been in, that's the music that's playing. Are these like light rock, soft hits, easygoing favorites? And it just framed the whole scene like even more different than it was prior to that. Like it was like, so now it's like we're like, this is their workplace. They're just talking shop. With
yeah, it's just
Sherry
like being
playing.
At the dentist office.
And then Todd makes that like little weird pass at Lydia.
Yeah, I mean, Lydia's hot.
Oh, she's hot.
So you gotta figure that these like scummy guys are probably... She probably has to deal with this all the time, which is why she doesn't get freaked out. She's kind of like, I believe in you, Todd. You know, she handles it really well.
Yeah, she did handle that very well. That's exactly what Todd needs to hear, which, you know, like he's obviously craving that. It's kind of like Jesse, where it's like he wants people to like him and to believe in him and for him to succeed. But then it just led to like right before he gets a phone call, he's like looking at her lipstick on the mug.
Yeah,
and you're just
creepy.
Like, what is going to happen to poor Lydia?
Yeah, Lydia's going to get, she's going to get stalked.
She's not going to meet a very good end, I don't think.
This makes me wonder, in the real crystal meth business, do people take their work as seriously? Or are they just kind of synthesizing methamphetamine?
Well, I'm thinking they're just synthesizing methamphetamine.
Are people out there fighting with each other, being like, I make just as good as meth as you? No way, man. My shit's the bomb. Like, no way, man. You don't, like, is this because we, that's. This whole time, you know, we've got the scenes with Walter and Jesse in the car, and he throws, like, the paper bag at him. You call this crystal meth? This is shit! And Jesse's
my
like,
stuff!
And Jesse's like, I make it just as good as he does. And it's like, is that really kind of like a competitive thing in the crystal meth business?
That's a very good question, actually. Like,
any crystal meth cooks out there, why don't you hit us up? Tell us what it's like.
Yeah, I mean, just... we need some insight here, because I didn't even stop to think about that. Like, all this stuff in the show, there's a lot of fighting over, like, turf, obviously. But there is this whole thing about the purity and, like, them arguing over the quality of the product. And you kind of wonder, is that actually a concern of any cooks? I don't think so. I think they just kind of crank that stuff out. No pun intended.
Crank. Remember when Gus took Jesse down to Mexico?
Pun intended.
And succeeded. And so he has Jesse do this big cook, and they're just sitting around waiting for the number to pop out. Like, I hope it's over 90. I hope it's over 90.
Yeah, that.
I just don't see that. Like, I can't really draw an analogy to it, you know?
Well, you don't ever say, like, I hope I get this route done, like, in this amount of time?
Well, yeah, but...
Like, I know that guy's done it in that amount of time.
You can't really judge the cause. Like Newman says, no one's ever gone over the 50% barrier. You can't really judge, like, a delivery percentage. But maybe,
what criteria,
like,
do we judge a delivery,
maybe, like,
man?
Budweiser brewers, they test, like, the purity of the Budweiser, like, how close to perfect Budweiser tastes like. I don't know,
well,
man.
They do. Places do quality control checks. That part is true. That happens all the time in, like, different industries.
Is it possible?
With meth,
is it possible for someone like Walter White, who obviously is the best meth cook in the world, can he be matched by someone like Jesse? Because that's what the show is trying to tell me. They're trying to tell me that this kid just has a natural gift for making meth, and he's learned under the tutelage of the master. But it doesn't matter anymore. No one's making meth anymore in this show.
No, they're not. Well, they're trying, but it's just not working. But they want Walt to make meth. That's what actually ends up happening. So
exactly.
This
scene was so important.
They agree to do the hit on Jesse if Walt will.
They will not take money. They need Walter to cook for them again. And therefore, Walt has become to Jack and all Todd's psycho buddy guys an investment, a important cog of their future business affairs with Lydia, and that's why what happens.
Well, that's exactly, but there's other reasons why what happens too, and it's Jesse comes up with a plan. Like, the plan that Jesse comes up is actually brilliant, because what gets proven is that Walt thought he knew Jesse and thought that his plan would work, that he would lure Jesse in by having him react in the way that he typically reacts. But instead, Jesse comes up with the plan banking on how Walt is going to react, and he nails it perfectly. Like, he pinpoints exactly what it is that would make Walt lose control and lose his any sort of, like, forethought as to what he's doing, or kind of like how Hank acted when he found out that Marie, when they called and said Marie was in the hospital, like, lose control that way.
Yeah, everyone has their thing, trigger.
So Jesse's plan, which was great, as we said, was great. First of all, they start to tease it and talk about it, like how they come up with it underneath that highway underpass. Did you notice it was the same one they used when Jesse got money thrown at him from Victor? He had to meet up with them back in season 2.
Oh, yeah, right.
It's the same, and I'm like, holy crap, because I was like, this underpass, like, this is so familiar. What are they doing here? And then what they were doing was they were meeting with Gomez, who is now just going along with this completely. And
classic Gomi.
Classic Gomi. That guy, man,
I'm on your
he's
side,
he's the only
yo,
one
Hank.
That hasn't broke bad, as they said.
No.
He's the only one. Which is actually pretty
good. Gomi, the first
and Walt Jr.
4.5 seasons, it was just like, Hank, man, I don't know what you're talking about. You're wasting company assets here, man. You're off the grid. You're my best friend and everything. And all of a sudden, he's like, I'm with you, Hank.
Sure.
Whatever you need, Hank. That's
sure.
Just like,
sure, you didn't mean you're off the reservation? Oh, because guess what? That's the name of the episode.
Is it?
Yeah, the Tohajili. That's the name of a Navajo reservation in New Mexico. And that's also, they've filmed on there like a bunch of times already. But yeah, funny, huh? Huh? No, not really. Puns are really funny, but for some reason I always make them. But get back to Gomez. Like, so they're meeting him underneath underneath the bridge there, underneath the highway overpass. And Jesse's plan is they need evidence because they don't have any evidence, but Walt is, like, far too smart for them, as he's proven to be. He's always one step ahead, not giving them anything. And that he would destroy, like, every piece of evidence, including people. He's proven that. Including people. I mean, so, you know, like, nothing is safe.
He'd destroy anything, like, records, people.
You know, his fingerprints, he wiped them down. This man leaves no stone unturned.
He got rid of, like, safe houses. He got rid of paraphernalia. He got rid of
paraplegics.
He got rid of residue. He got rid of people.
Sorry, man. Cut me some slack. Okay. He would. He's ruthless. He's ruthless. Okay. But what's the one thing that Walt wouldn't destroy?
Jesse.
Well, okay. That's two. No, he would destroy because he's trying to get Jesse killed. It'd be money. Okay.
No, I knew it was money. I thought
we were going to do it. I know.
But... we're going to do the thing where you said kept going his dog or...
No.
Walter Jr.
I didn't know we were doing the thing. But the thing is, he wouldn't destroy... You're right. He wouldn't destroy Walter Jr.
Barrels of banded up $100 bills in cash, which even the show cannot tell us how much it could possibly be.
Yeah,
it's impossible to count this money. I want a figure on it, goddammit.
I know. That's what the internet needs to do. They need to figure out what if you had those barrels filled with that. Someone's going to do it. They probably have already done it, and we're just missing it. But the way they get this to all happen is they pretty much shake down Huel, who is over at the doghouse.
The doghouse.
Like, waiting for Jesse to pop up. And they get him over in a safe house, and they show him a fake picture of Jesse with, like, raw meat near his head and make him think that Jesse had been killed.
Now, how do you feel about that scene?
I loved it, actually.
Do you think that if you were Huel... you would have found that photo to be authentic?
I think Huel was paranoid. He's been picked up by the cops. Hank is telling him now that they're going to, like...
You Does know, like, Huel
that
he's know...
he's going to kill them. That
Huel knows that Hank is
saying that Kubi already left.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't know.
Yeah, I understand if Huel would buy it. Like, that's a situation where you're just, like, scared out of your mind.
All right, so they use the information that Jesse has combined with
They find out that he had seven barrels, that he rented a van. They find out the renting pattern about, like, I think it was who... Walt picked it up, they loaded it, and then they cleaned it and dropped it off, right? That was the thing. And they don't know where he went, and just that he went out and he came back with a shovel.
So they're hoping that the van had GPS so they could find out where he went.
Which it didn't,
And this should be a lesson to all those rental car companies out there. You should have GPS in all your vehicles.
Yeah, it would definitely.
What year is this? This plot would be over.
This plot would be over. Just like if this was in Canada, the show would have been over.
Because he would have gotten health care.
Because he would have gotten health care.
Oh, man.
He wouldn't have had to make all the meth.
That's what the whole show is. It's just a big lesson about
it
how
is.
We should
Some
model
liberal
ourselves after
fucking
Canada.
Propaganda about Obamacare and why we should all be on board. All
right, so no GPS in the van.
No GPS in the van.
They don't know where the money is.
They have
plot. That's it. Game over.
All they know is that he buried it.
Game over, says Gomi.
But
it's not over, is it?
Here's what they do. Okay, so
you know what? Hank is smarter than Gomi. It's like if you were to make a pyramid of people who were smart, it would be like Walt at the top, and then Hank and kind of Jesse, maybe A and B.
But that's what that. But
Gomi is the worst. Gomi is the dumbest.
He is the dumbest.
Can we just agree on that?
Oh, he is the dumbest.
He's so dumb. He doesn't believe anything anybody says. He doesn't care.
No, but then he believes everything everybody says.
Yes, he's both.
Oh, you're smarter than me, Hank. So what you're saying must be true. Okay, I'll go check it out. Like
that's no GPS in the van. I guess it's over. And then Hank's like,
hi.
Actually,
Walter doesn't know that there's no GPS in the van.
All we gotta do. Is bury a barrel in the backyard, fill it with a bunch of cash, take a picture of it, and boom.
Which is one of the.
Where'd they get the money from?
Did they
make it? Like, is it Monopoly money?
You know, that's a good question, and that's not even one I've seen pop up yet. Although, I should be more vigilant checking the old message boards on the internet see if people notice that. But yeah,
did Jesse have money left over from his?
It could have been the money from the binge. They might have. No, but we didn't see them leave. Like, that's the problem in that show. Like, it's like if they're going to have us see them go use evidence money, like, they would have us go see them use evidence money. It wouldn't be assumed. But I have no idea where they got it.
Yeah.
It's a mystery. Maybe someone could let us know. Drop us a dime, a line on Twitter.
So with their information of knowing what Huell knows, they officially are in a position to trick Walt into thinking that they have found the money. And they get him racing to the crime scene.
But before that, how Walt ends up racing to the crime scene is he's at the car wash, working at the car wash, and he's like Saul ends up walking in, and that's one I would say like one of the better scenes of the entire.
Why don't you just fucking die already?
Oh, yes. Oh, and Walt Jr. is there too. And
oh, I forgot. I almost forgot that Walter Jr. was at the car wash.
It's him being at the car wash is some of the most comedic moments of the entire series. And there's been a lot of like weird dark comedy here, but this is all based on like this it's somewhat ironic. And it's also like it's just because it's Walter Jr. Okay, so he's doing the register. We come into the car wash where he's given change and he's counting it out. And then he tells the person, "Go give this to your attendant," as they always do. As we've seen it many times. And his mom edges him on and tells him, kind of nudges him and says,
"Wait, you're not going to say it?
You got to say it." He's like, "Have an A1 day."
But he doesn't say it right away. He waits till the guy's like 10 minutes.
He waits till the guy's almost gone.
And he
complains about it. And her whole reasoning was it reinforces our brand, which was great because it obviously as far as writing goes, which I know you have complaints a lot, it calls back to Lydia talking to Todd and Jack and them about reinforcing the brand, having the recognition.
Yes, the car wash, the blue meth. It's all the same. Can I just set up the scene a little bit more before we go on?
No. Okay. How can you set it up more than have an A1 day?
Because Walter Jr. is there at their car wash that they are laundering money for their meth business.
But they don't know.
She's training her son to work in her drug front business, and he is not able to go to his house because it's soaked in gasoline because a guy that they're trying to currently kill is on the loose and he tried to burn their house down.
Did I say sort of irony? I meant a lot of irony.
So yeah, it's a little bit more than he's just happens to be at the car wash. He's at the car wash because of a whole bunch of crazy messed up circumstances.
But he's also learning the family business, which she says to him, "Stick around.
Do I have
I
to
need
say
you.
That, Mom?
Stick Have around, I need day. You." Which I think is like kind of being like, he's going to live. But then Saul shows up, and that makes for the next part of this scene where it kind of turns into this whole other thing because we know Saul. So the levels of irony here are just building upon themselves.
We know Saul.
Walter Jr. is a joke.
Skyler knows Saul. We know why Skyler knows Saul. We know everything except Walter Jr. is just there, and he thinks that he sees this guy. He just thinks that he has
to. Oh, whoa! The celebrity, the lawyer from TV.
You're
is
on
here.
The TV.
What happened to your face? Because of course you know that's gonna be. It's an occupational hazard.
Yeah. Don't drink and drive, but if you do, call me. Oh my God!
The best part is when he comes in, he starts saying his slogan like a parrot over and over, like "Better call Saul." Just like on cue. That was just perfect. But it gets even better because okay, so now like Saul's there and he's trying to like he needs to meet with them and Skyler knows something's up. Walt goes and talks and comes back in and has all this thing. Skyler says goodbye to him and she doesn't say the line. And Walter Jr. says, "Mom, you forgot to say it." And she's just like, "Yeah,
yeah,
I did."
That just, man doesn't deserve to have an A1 day.
I just, they set you up with this amazing piece of irony. Okay, this is like irony laden humor that's just like top notch, like making it like so. At this point already, it's already up there. And then that's the moment where they call Walt to trick him to lure him out to where he hid the money, which is where they're going to find the evidence. So what they call him. Well, first they send him a picture.
Yeah.
And then immediately call him.
You like my photo, bitch?
Get my photo, bitch.
At the moment that Jesse calls Walt and they're on the phone, that sequence, it's only like a minute, 2 minutes.
Yeah.
It's incredible. It's like a Darren Aronofsky sequence, just like the music playing and dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, and they just cut from Walt like in the car wash, and he's rushing to his car, and he's driving down, and he's like, don't you know why I did this? And Jesse's like talking to him, and he's like, Jesse's like this ominous voice all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And it's just like such a crazy ear. Like, is this real? It's kind of like a dream sequence almost, the way they film
it. It is like a dream. Because it goes from 0 to 60 like so quickly. You're just like, 1 minute he's there talking to Saul, the next minute he is just off and then having this insane conversation with Jesse, where Jesse's just like, you know, telling him, I'm going to burn the money. He tells him all about the GPS. Yeah. That they, you know, like, that there's GPS in the car. They know what it is. I'm at your money. I'm going to burn it. Walt flips out, is begging him, like, over and over again, don't touch my money. Don't do it. And then he says the thing that Walt's been turning to this entire season. Every time someone's, like, pushing him to a point, he needs to get out.
I have cancer.
Jesse, I have cancer again.
I have cancer. What are you doing this to me for?
I'm not going
to
live very long. Like, this is for my kids. Trying to make him think. Like, but at this point, it's like, I like how it's built upon itself every single time, because it's gotten a little less effective, like, every time. And at this point, it's just, it sounds sad and desperate.
Yeah.
Like, they
place it very well, so you know exactly what
which is the state doing. Of mind that he's been in. He's been getting more sad and desperate as every episode of this season goes on, and it just starts to unravel. He's just getting more and more desperate. But so he says about that, he's like, oh, this is for my kids, which obviously opens the door to Jesse to be like, you want to talk about kids? And then it goes into this whole, you know, the Brock thing, which he admits to poisoning him on.
Don't you know I knew how much to give him?
Oh my god,
he's alive, isn't he?
I actually, while this is happening, like, I stopped typing because I always, you know, take notes to help me as I look it over later. I stopped typing. I just kept saying, oh, shit. As I was like, what? I just kept saying, like, I haven't had that moment in television in a while where you're, like, talking to the TV and saying, like, to a main character and saying, what are you doing? Like, this is, like, I don't know why I'm trying to protect Walt here, but I'm like, why are you admitting everything on the phone?
Yeah.
You're being so sloppy.
Because he never – everything is possible because he never assumed that it was even the slightest possibility that Jesse could be talking to the cops.
Exactly. He didn't think at all.
He thought Jesse was on the phone trying to get him somewhere to kill him.
Yes.
But the fact that he could be talking to the cop, that's why. Like, there's no way the picture could be fake. There's no way, because Huell is the only one who knew.
You know
what I'm saying? So Huell was involved with the cop. Like, everything.
It's like he closed his mind off completely to any of these options.
That's why I actually really don't have any problems for the first time with the writers in this episode, because it makes sense that Walt would believe it.
Yeah, that's true.
Because the only way he could have known this is if he was cooperating.
I like how he ended it, though. I like how the whole thing ended. Like, first, Jesse starts saying, I'm going to burn 10G, like, for every minute or whatever that it takes to get here. But also, he ends up saying that he's like, I did it to save both of our lives, and that Jesse was too stupid to realize. So this whole time that he's like, I just need to reason with Jesse. He gets thrown in this position where he gets thrust into these fits of anger, which has been, and he just loses it, and he doesn't even reason with him. He begs, he pleads. And then he insults him.
It's also believable that he would burn the money because he's already thrown a bunch of money out the window.
I know, it is. It's complete. But this entire episode is just written perfectly and it's shot perfectly. I mean, there's no big shots here in this episode. There's none of those weird camera tricks or like this backdrop of like one person behind this like really interesting scene or anything like that. It's really just like action. It's just like how things overlay as far as the action and the movement, but it's perfect up until this point.
Yeah.
So then he gets out there, he drives there, sees Jesse isn't there, realizes he's been had.
Yeah, that is so – that was just gut-wrenching because you're like, oh, my God, this guy's such a fool. He's such an idiot. But then he gets the car drives up and there's no one there.
There's no one there. And he
doesn't want to believe it yet. He doesn't want to believe – like, oh, maybe they're in the wrong spot or maybe they're
Yeah.
No,
he doesn't want to believe that Jesse, you know, told Hank, and that which is really what it comes down to. Sees a car coming, assumes it's Jesse, like – get, you know, the car, the person gets out, he hides, he's hiding behind rocks. Then people start getting out. He realizes it's Hank.
Yeah.
And that's where everything just sinks. And you see it on him. You see, like, he just kind of, behind that rock, he succumbs. And then they start yelling for him. He comes out with his arms up, you know, like, well, actually, before he comes out, he calls up Jack.
Before he knew that it was Hank, he called Jack.
Yeah.
He said, all right, that's Jesse. Jesse is here, come out here, here are the coordinates. So he calls Jack to come for backup. But then when he sees it's Hank, he says, no, don't come. It's over. I'm just going to surrender and such. And it's such a great – I'm like, what's going to happen? Is he going to dig a hole and just sleep? For, is this how the episode's going
to – Wait it out. He's just going to wait it out. No. He calls Jack and there's – you know, and then calls it off. However, as we see, that isn't really the case because you don't
need to. Yeah, because when it's a DEA operation, you can't just call a bunch of hitmen.
Yeah, you can't. Forget
it. So.
Well, plus there's more than that. But so Hank finally, you know, starts yelling to him and, you know, like tells him, come out with your weapon. A lot of like just shouting at him. He comes out, his arms up. Like for the first time, I agreed with Vulture about their whole religious imagery thing that they've been saying all season and about the show. I never like totally go all the way there. I think they're kind of like seeing it themselves. But this time it was just like the way he comes out, like Jesus just giving himself up completely. He doesn't put up any fight. His arms are up like over his head, but not like over his head like your typical crime drama way.
Well, I think if Jesus had a chemistry background, he probably would have made some crystal meth.
You think so?
Yeah, I mean, he was like...
He was from the desert, too. I mean, there's a lot of places to make it there.
Yeah, he could have made some really good stuff because he was perfect.
He would have put that stuff in the fish.
He was both all divine and all human.
Yes.
Stay tuned next week for my criticism of the Christian theology.
That probably is going to happen eventually, which is funny. Whenever I think of my wardrobe choices of the day, I think, oh, that might have been appropriate. But anyway, so he comes out, assumes a position. They get this. The look on Jesse's face was just...
He can't believe he's actually surrendering.
He couldn't believe it. He looked like a kid that they've been like kind of making him out to be this entire time. Like this, like, all right, justice prevailed. Like, life is awesome.
We got him.
You know, like, because he was very much a part of...
That it was basically game. It was probably only like 3 or 4 minutes. It seemed like 10 minutes.
It seemed like
a gratification, like stroke fest of like Jesse, Hank, Gomi, just all right, it's over. You know, Hank calls Marie.
Which actually the internet has been positing that's pretty much means that Hank's dead. Because him calling Marie is almost like last rites.
It's a very macabre kind of conversation. I don't see how he can get out of it.
No, because the conversation was so serious.
We got so heavy. I'm so proud of you. I'm happy now.
I'm happy.
I love you. Yeah, I love you. Like, come on.
Now that we're talking about this, that's maybe the one part where the writers just kind of like...
Laid it on a little thick,
yeah. But hangs up with her. Doesn't call the DA first, obviously. He calls her to tell her this. Now...
Because we know Hank escapes the situation somehow. I mean, yeah. Walter.
Well, definitely. That's all I kept thinking the entire time. Is like, well, obviously he gets out. How's he going to get out? Is it going to be in the car? Is it going to be... Because then they started saying, Gomi, you stay here with Jesse and you know, wait for the search crew to come out. I'll take Hank in. So you start thinking, is something happening on the way there? But...
Is he going to fashion some device because he's like MacGyver and break his handcuffs?
But no. What happens is... And I had the same horrific feeling that Walter White had on his face when it happened. Fucking Uncle Jack shows up.
He shows up anyway.
Because
he doesn't care what Walter says. He just wants Walter to help Todd make the meth better. It's all about the meth, man. Yeah.
So they need – that's all about the meth, and it's all about their money. And so
it was such a great scene too, the standoff.
The standoff.
Before the shooting. Oh, my God.
Well, everything leading up to that. So they show up. We're like what the hell is going on? I wrote fucking Christ in my notes. Like, I was just like, I couldn't take like this entire sequence. Then this happens. Walt the entire time is trying to say no, calling it off, because he doesn't want Hank to get killed, because Hank is family, which.
And unfortunately,
brings
in
this
me,
whole like who is Walter? Like what is he? What matters?
What matters is him being the man without, you know, messing stuff up. He knows if Hank dies, then Maria will be devastated, and Skyler will be devastated. He doesn't want anyone to be devastated. He just kind of wants to win.
So you don't think it's the family part? You don't think it's because it's family? Because he's mentioned it before. When
a brother-in-law, is not family. Come on.
He considers him family. It's been brother-in-law for many years.
The fact is, if he died, Skylar would be upset.
Okay. He wouldn't be happy now. Right. They wouldn't have a good marriage now. Exactly.
He preferred to have gotten away with it and beaten Hank.
But also in that whole like, leading up to this final standoff here, when Walt's in handcuffs, Jesse starts kind of taunting him, Jesse didn't taunt him, but Walt looks at Jesse and just yells, "Coward!"
Yeah, after Hank reads him his rights, yeah, in this very like dramatic scene,
he just flips on Jesse.
Everyone's just kind of like
starts like headbutting him and like going after him, like scrapping. And that's when you start to realize, Jesse spit at him. That's
Someone
right.
spits at me, I'm gonna headbutt the
I
shit out of him.
Forgot that Jesse spat on him. Oh,
he said,
so much
he called him a coward.
Huh?
He called him a coward. He said, "Do you have anything to say?" Blah, blah, blah. And he said, "Coward," looking at Jesse. Jesse comes up, spits at him, and then he goes to headbutt him, which I don't care who I've killed. Someone spits at me, I'm going to headbutt the shit out of him.
You got to go Zidane on their ass when that happens. Yeah. But, like, that just called into question, though, what are Walter White's values? Okay, so he was calling – he's killed – many people, as we've gone through the litany of his crimes many
times. They're all bad.
But
Alone for True Lies, remember
yes,
Schwarzenegger?
Yes.
How many people have you killed? A lot.
Fun fact about True Lies.
But they're all bad.
I watched it like 5 times before I ever saw the ending, because for some reason that always was either on or someone brought that, or like a girl brought that movie over when it was like, we're hanging out, we're probably gonna make out and stuff. Okay.
True Lies is a good naked.
So somehow that always happened.
Dude, I always wanted to have a girl with me when I was watching True Lies, because that would be the perfect time.
It happened like 4 times, and then the 5th time I was like, I need to just fast forward to the ending, because I never saw any of the end parts of that movie with like way high up.
Oh my god,
where the daughter was like hanging from the thing.
Yeah,
man. Like,
that was such a great ending to that movie. We should watch that soon.
It was. We should watch it. But anyway, we should finish this. Now, Walter's issue here, because we're going way over. The issue that I found here is like, so Walt now thinks it's okay to kill people. Like, it's okay to kill Jesse, who is like family that he's mentioned. But it's not okay to rat to the police. So he's adopted the criminal code.
But he didn't want to kill Jesse. He didn't want to kill
Jesse. He didn't want to, but it's okay. But
it's not okay. He didn't want to do it.
Snitching is never okay, according to him. Like, you snitched on me? Walt was trying to kill him.
He thought
Walt was trying to kill him.
He thought Jesse was going to kill him. It's either kill – you want to defend yourself.
That's true. The poor communication, these two, huh? That's been the problem the whole time.
Look,
this communication issue.
Where Walt went wrong with Jesse was poisoning the son of the woman that he was currently dating. That's all. That's the only thing.
That's true. If he hadn't done that, everything would have been fine. So, Jeff, I mean, we've said it before. We said it in the beginning, but after this insane standoff, which, I mean, takes Mexican standoff and puts it up to like another level, as them yelling, "Show us your badges!" Like that douchebag Kenny, the other neo-Nazi, just starts firing an automatic.
Doesn't
weapon.
Hit anything.
Doesn't hit anything. Not a lot of people are being hit at all.
No one has
gotten
really
shot. Bad.
There's
fire.
At least 150 rounds fired already. No one is hit.
And then it just ends. And they just.
We have a mid shootout ending to a show, a cliffhanger mid shootout.
And I don't.
What's going to happen? I don't know.
I don't
we know Walt doesn't die. That's all we know.
That's the only thing. And Skyler leaves a message for him because that was the only thing in the preview. The preview showed clips that have already happened and then just played the message. They're playing everything so close to their chest at this point that it's...
I think it's close to the vest.
Close to the vest? Well, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, well, you can't have it too close
but
to your chest.
But your vest is on your chest.
Yeah, but your vest, you could pin it to your chest, but you can't pin something to your chest.
Because... Nation.
Yeah.
Could you let us know about this? No, I mean, I believe Jeff because he has studied the English language far more than I have.
That's fact.
But I still think they both work, so I'm making it a thing. Starting here.
Close to the chest. Let's keep it close to the chest, people.
I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I don't even want to start to speculate because it's like almost it's pointless at this point because where we're leading off going to the next one, what we know going forward, there's not a lot of room. We don't know anyone who lives besides Walt.
In a perfect world, Jesse would take the car and drive away.
Hank probably dies though.
Hank would get shot but survive in a hospital in a coma. Walter obviously gets away, and only Gomi would die.
Now, but here's the thing.
Gomi is such a useless fucking character. It makes me so angry.
On Talking Bad.
Talking Bad!
Which I tend to watch every week, or at least try to.
It's like Breaking Bad, only talking about it, so it's like Talking Bad.
And it's like Talking Dead, but it's about to Breaking Bad.
I don't talk about Talking Dead because I don't watch Walking Dead because I have nightmares about zombies. Because
you are a scaredy cat. It's okay. But they had Bryan Cranston on and Don Cheadle from, you might recognize he was in that show Golden Palace. Ever see? It's a sequel to Golden Girls.
Everyone except Arthur.
You might know him from that. I don't know. He's been in some other stuff too.
He's kind of like an Italian guy, right?
No, I know who you're thinking of, though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no.
He was in Rounders.
Was he in Rounders?
Yeah, he was the guy who was the card player.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that was him. It was totally him. Well, he was on it with Bryan Cranston and also the actor who plays Gomez, okay? Which made me think Gomez dies because they're bringing this guy in this week. He's just dead.
This is like his last hurrah.
Yeah, this is his last hurrah. But I'm really interested then, before we break to the postal tip of the week, which I know, you know, the people that dropped out, they're checking now every like couple minutes to see where we're at here. they're like, oh, still talking about Breaking Bad? Jeez! God. One-track mind, these assholes. Bryan Cranston says on it, and I quote here, "You won't be disappointed. As you know, there's a big gunfight. It's fantastic. It goes into the next episode. But it ends in an unapologetic Breaking Bad way." So that gives me, like, I've been fairly confident this entire time that I wouldn't be disappointed. But hearing it from him, like, and he had a lot to say. If anybody wants to check out Talking Bad, it's on the AMC site. You can check it out. They even have more stuff from, but just hearing it from Bryan Cranston assures me that we're going to get a good...
Yeah, that's nice that you say that, but I don't trust actors. I think that Bryan Cranston is the main character in the show, and he probably thinks it's a lot better than anybody else would think it would be. So, they could totally let me down next week. When he says an unapologetic Breaking Bad way, I'm hoping that means a major character dies in that shootout. What it probably means is that's not going to happen.
Well,
Since Dean Norris said that this season was Hank's revenge, quote unquote. So how could his revenge be arresting Walt and then immediately dying?
Well, you're right. Good point. Maybe I take that back. Hey, for anyone, I'm taking it back again. Hank probably doesn't die. But it's possible that Hank is one of possibly a few people that are chasing him at the end.
It would be funny if Hank
didn't... As we've said, now we're repeating ourselves.
It would be funny if Hank didn't die but got shot in the back and had to go through all that physical therapy.
But without Walter's money? No one's there to pay for it this time.
I'm sick of this. He's like buying minerals at like at twice the clip.
No, this time it'd be magic cards. Totally magic cards. So that concludes us talking about Breaking Bad. I think we got a little bit of time left, Jeff. I was going to talk about the Lamar Odom shit that's been going on.
Lamar Odom?
Yeah, actually, because
I'm actually fascinated. What's happening with
Marlon? I'll talk about it another time. Oh, you didn't hear?
No.
Dude's on drugs.
What kind of drugs?
Swerving. Crack cocaine.
Crack is whack.
Crack cocaine.
He's got money. He's got money.
Why that's why I didn't want to start getting into this now, because I feel like we could talk about it another time. Next time we'll talk about Lamar Odom.
Unfortunately,
the whole thing that happens with them and just the fact of Khloe Kardashian goes off on Twitter about it and it's just kind
of... Josh, can you promise me one thing?
What?
We're best friends, right?
Yeah.
That was kind of like... inquisitive tone that you said that.
Well, you know, I know that we've got some people listening here that also have some stake in that question, and you're one of my best friends. How about the Rouge Burgers, huh?
Yes, well, we only have 3 episodes of Breaking Bad left, and the last episode of Breaking Bad, I can't even imagine what that podcast is going to be like, because it's probably going to be the second greatest experience of my life behind eating a Rouge Burger.
That's pretty splendid there.
For those of you who don't know, Rouge is a restaurant in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And if you ever find yourself in Philadelphia, you go to Rouge and you get yourself a Rouge Burger, because it is goddamn tasty.
You have to experience it to really understand.
I can't even explain to you how good this burger is. It is the best burger.
I'm at a loss of words when I try to describe like how
what they do is they
I just can't come up with like anything.
What they do is they really take ground beef and they cook it. They cook it on a hot surface, and they put it between 2 pieces of bread. And they serve it to you, and you eat it, and oh my God.
Your taste buds have gone on a trip to
Not William
Mars.
Shakespeare, not Ben Howard, not anybody Kylie Rae Jepsen could describe how good this burger is.
All poets in, them, in
the,
their own
The
right.
3 greatest poets of all time, I say.
We're down to an audience of 1 here. That's what we've done. But for that audience of 1, and any of you who have... gone, you know, stuck through us through obvious things that you don't understand. We've got the Postal Tip of the Week. And, Jeff, this one's got to be quick. So, here it is.
All right, Postal Tip of the Week. It's September. It's fall, which means it's almost Christmas. If you have a mailman, which you all do, because everyone gets mail, leave them a Christmas tip. We call them yoo-hoos, okay? The people yoo-hoos. That give us yoo-hoos, we like them. The people that don't give us yoo-hoos, we don't like them. So don't be cheap. We're the only person that comes to your house every stinking day and provides you a direct service. Yeah, the garbage man, fine. That's once a week. You want to get the garbage man a case of beer, get the garbage man a case of beer. But give us a yoo-hoo, a tip. Some money, maybe. An expensive bottle of wine would be great, too.
Jeff will also take payment in yoo-hoos because they're chocolate water and they're delicious.
Yes, and they're high in potassium. Literal yoo-hoos are great yoo-hoos.
I want to just end it right there, but I just like a part of me, I'm like, wow, we're already – the Christmas creep is really, really getting insane this year.
Just put like a quarter, 50 cents a week until Christmas for your mailman tip. It'd be fine.
One of them Christmas clubs at your bank, but for your mailman's yoo-hoos.
Those packages, you're like, oh, why is it taking so long to get here? You'll get them a couple days earlier, okay? We do that on purpose.
Oh, that was the next thing I was going to ask was like, so are there, is this a grease and palms there giving these yoo-hoos? Do you get like, you know, make sure your mail's there by a certain time or like
tips.
The packages don't get broken?
TIPS is an acronym to ensure prompt service. That's all I got to say. Tip your mailman at Christmas time.
Or any time, really. No, don't do that. That's not endorsed by the U.S. Postal Service. Don't tip them every day.
Sometimes I give, if I have a male lady, I'll give her like a Valentine's Day card.
Oh, you're suave. You're like some sort of Don Juan.
You know, it brightens up our day when people think of us as real people and not just mules.
So I think that's a good way to end. Jeff's station in life, describing himself as he's a mule, but he's also a person, and his humanity can't be lost just because of his job. So that's supposed to tip of the week. Tune back in, come back here next week, or back over here to Place to Be Nation. We're going to talk about the next episode. It's called Ozymandias. Is that how you pronounce that, Jeff? It's a Mary Shelley poem.
Ozymandias.
Ozymandias. I've looked it up.
They erected a statue to this king who thought he would live forever, but the statue was deteriorating because, you know, nothing lasts forever. I prefer Wallace Stevens, the Emperor of Ice Cream. The only emperor is the Emperor of Ice Cream because ice cream melts. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, yes.
Yeah?
Either way, I think they're dropping some metaphors on us, kind of letting us know what might be happening.
Yeah, Vince Gilligan is going to ruin these last three episodes big time with his pretentiousness.
Oh, the last one so far is titled Felina, which is an anagram of palindrome. It's the one where they switch the letters around to make another word. Palindrome. It's palindrome of finale. Felina. So.
That's not what it's a palindrome. A palindrome is backwards.
Okay, so what is? Oh, that's right. Palindrome is backwards. Oh, it's an anagram.
Maybe an anagram.
It's an anagram.
I thought that was.
Acronym. Again, hit us up. Let us know. We can find us on Twitter. That's at Mashadouche. That's MashaDouche. And I'm at Joshua Richer. And you can also find us, check out Place to Be Nation for all the content we got going there. Football started. The power rankings are going. You got your obvious wrestling content that, you know, it's happening on the Dilly. Total Divas watching Divas.
If anybody wants to tweet at me at Mashadouche, I'm a gambling addict. $10. The Jets finish the season with 15 losses.
Again, Jeff, you cannot make bets over the internet.
1 in 15, $10, tweet at me.
All right, before you get us arrested or at least get us shut down, we're going
to... I'm just kidding.
We're going to go.
No, really.
So, I'm Josh Richer.
I'm Jeff Machado.
And Richer and the Mailman, and see you next week.
Have an A1 day.
You didn't say it. She musters a smile.